This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
It's just kind of jump into basically explain what was going on with the piece of audio that we're going to be putting that we're going to be preparing here shortly. I went down to Portland Youth Builders recently, and Ricky was one of my students. And why don't you go ahead and just kind of explain what we did there and what this segment is about that we're about to air for everybody.
Well, this segment is about me and a few other students were talking about pain of incarceration, racism, and what can we do to help people in jail / prison. We gave our input on it, and we gained a lot of experience from it.
What were some of the things that kind of stuck out for you when we worked on it? I mean, and just so everybody knows, Ricky's holding it down for PYB today. He's the one person in the class that was able to make it, and I'm really happy that he's here with me today. I really like seeing him on the mic live, so it's a cool thing. But talk a little bit about what kind of what that experience was like for you.
It was a good experience. I felt strongly with my idea, researched it more, gained more knowledge about it, and I still have my feelings from what I believe in.
Cool. Well, let's. Why don't we go ahead and put that piece of audio up? This is a segment put together by the entire class that we worked with there at PYB, and I'm really proud of it. So I'm anxious to get it out there and let people hear about what we kind of worked on. So go ahead.
Hey, this is Rex and Danny from PYB on KBOO Radio. This is Prison Pipeline.
Our segment tonight is on the pain of incarceration. We'll be sharing a couple of poems.
My mom was in jail and wrote a poem about how she felt and what was going on at her time of incarceration. Here it is. What's there to say about jail? It's scary, it's hell. Told where to go, expected to know. Eat the food that's greasy and cold. Who cares if it's 3 days old? Keep my eyes down. Don't laugh. Don't frown. Don't make friends. They'll turn on you in the end. I did the crime. Now pay the time. Sleep my time away. Monotony gets me through the day. Pretend everything's fine. Don't twitch too much in the midline. I cry for my daughter every day. All I can do is wait and pray. Maybe I'll see her on Visitor's Day. Now here's Danny with her poem.
Hey, I'm Danny, and I'm going to share with you a poem I wrote called No More Chains, about the long-term effects of prison. I've never been incarcerated, but I know it takes a toll on people who are, and their families. No more chains round my feet. They walk free, but slowed down, yet full of freedom. But my freedom comes with a price. My past lingers around me, forever linked to slow me down. No job, no home to call my own. I'm dragging my world down for money and no crown. A false idol is what I am, a shame to my family. I know my mistakes, and they know me too. They've grown with me, almost like a child. Big as my mistakes were, I'm much bigger, a changed soul on the right way home. According to progressivestates.org, nearly 650,000 people are released from prison every year. 50% go back due to a parole violation or a new crime committed in under 3 years.
It really hurts seeing loved ones behind glass. It kills us, and it kills them too. According to E. Mosley, 70% of children with incarcerated parents go through the same struggle their parents did.
All of us have gone through hard times. It's never easy, but we always learn to move on and become a better person.
These poems tell us about how the past can affect us, but we learn to be strong and never give up.
Now you hear from some other students at PYB.
Hey everyone, this is Jessica Ramirez. The topic we want to discuss right now is the injustice going on in the prison industry. I think we've all heard about cops racially profiling, but I don't really think that people know how bad it is until someone gives statistics for an accurate sense of what actually happens. So here's Misha with some statistics.
Thank you, Jessica. According to the Center for American Progress, While people of color make up about 30% of the United States population, they amount for 60% of those in prison. According to the Bureau of Justice, 1 in 3 black men can expect to go to prison in a lifetime. Also, students of color face harsher punishments in school than their white peers, leading to a higher number of youth of color incarcerated.
Those are some pretty interesting and eye-opening facts, Misha. As a woman of color, have you or any family member had any of these experiences relating to these stats? What's your reaction to this information?
CJ, I think it's unfair that people of color get targeted by the law. For example, my brother got stopped for jaywalking and got taken into custody because they said he looked like somebody who broke into a house. They never showed him a picture of the guy. They just said he was an African-American male with braids. That's kind of sound like an excuse to me. Like, how convenient is that? They're just going around arresting every black man with braids?
Yeah, that is pretty unfair. It makes me wonder what would have happened if the suspect was white.
That definitely sounds like racial profiling to me.
Here's another statistic to think about. Voter laws that prohibit people with felony convictions to vote disproportionately impact men of color.
That bothers me a lot, because it wasn't until the 1900s that African Americans were given the right to vote. It took nearly 350 years of sweat, blood, and tears for that to happen, and now they're making it so a large portion of black people can't vote because of this discriminatory system.
It's not just African-American men that are getting targeted. It's also women, especially Hispanic women. How do you feel about this, Jessica?
Yeah, CJ. There's actually an article on AmericanProgress.org about the new trends in women being incarcerated. And while the number of African-American women incarcerated has decreased by a lot, which is good, the number of white and Hispanic women has increased by a significant amount. But just overall, the number of women being sent to jail is going up by a lot, even more than men, and 30 of these women are in there for nonviolent drug offenses.
Also, most of these women, 85% to be exact, has a history of sexual and mental abuse, and most of them have children to take care of. Some of them are pregnant when they go to jail and have to live through terrible conditions when giving birth.
Like your sister, right? She had an amazing story of how the terrible conditions in prison affected her pregnancy.
When she first went to jail, she actually wanted to get an abortion, but the prison wouldn't pay for it. She later had to get an emergency C-section and have the baby. They made her go back to prison the day after her C-section. She was in a lot of pain. She was calling us, asking us what to do.
I mean, women usually have to take, like, months to fully heal. Didn't the prison do anything to help her?
They did a lot to help her. They gave her some Tylenol, and they gave her plenty of time to rest, 3 days, actually. Then it was back to working with her other women.
Wow, that's ridiculous. Your sister's a really strong woman for going through all that, Misha. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, that's the end of our segment about the injustice and discrimination going in our prisons. Thank you for listening, and thanks, Misha and Jessica, for joining me in this very necessary conversation, and I hope you all keep talking about this at home.
If you're curious about what we can do to help people affected by the injustice in the prison industry, stick around for our next segment with Sarah and Ricky.
Hey, what it is, I'm Ricky with my sidekick, Sarah.
Hey!
And we're on KBOO Radio. We're going to be talking about what can we do to help people in jail / prison. And the first topic that we're going to be talking about is the death penalty.
The death penalty. Pretty much what I think about the death penalty is that it's ridiculous and you're pretty much, you're doing murder yourself.
Yeah, you're right. Get this. Just the state alone of California spends $134 million a year on the death penalty. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that one. Let's talk a little bit about Measure 11. I mean, how do you feel about that?
It's bogus. Like, just say if a little girl is walking home at night and she gets attacked by a man and she defends herself by hitting him with her backpack, she can get charged for a Measure 11. That's second degree assault.
That's wrong. And then, you know, she can't get a job, especially if she just turned 18. I mean, that alone could really traumatize somebody, especially a young girl.
The prosecuting attorney doesn't care about you at all. He just wants you to be miserable.
Yeah, because it all leads up to finances. I mean, these days they want you in jail because it's the only way they can make money. They're not caring about you individually, personally. They're caring about finance.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, what can we do would be to make jails and prisons better, to make these people, you know, not having to keep making it a recycling circle and they just keep going back and keep going back.
What I'm going to do is give them more yard time. Some prisoners are locked up in solitary confinement, some 24 hours a day, some for 23 hours a day. That's just wrong.
Yeah, that could really make somebody insane.
Yeah, I don't know how that feels. I personally think we should just get rid of it.
Be drowning with their own thoughts. I mean, we need to help them. We need to get counselors in there. We need to get, you know, schooling in there. We need to get, you know, even little boxing classes, art classes, anything that can get them out of that and make them see a different world than what they're used to seeing, you know, help them. Make jails and prisons treatment centers, you know, instead of locking them up for money. And to sum this up, I mean, I think we've came to the conclusion that we need to make prison and jails more of treatment centers other than what it is now.
Yeah, and we got to build them up instead of break them down.
Exactly.
Peace. This is Ricky.
And this is Sarah, and you're listening to KBOO Radio.
So that was our segment by the Portland Youth Builders class. What did you call them? Group one?
Crew one.
Crew one. Okay. So just for folks that aren't, well, so I wanted to mention one thing at that very tail end, just so folks know, we're not talking about, you know, Ricky wasn't talking about building more prisons, you know, building those up. He was talking about building up the individuals that are incarcerated, building them up. Just so you folks are aware, because the conversation had kind of gone from, you know, I can't even remember how it went, but anyways, we won't worry about that. Just so you guys know, that's what he meant. Why don't you talk a little bit about what Portland Youth Builders is about, and kind of what your experience is there, Ricky?
Well, it's an alternative high school. You can gain your GED there, or gain your diploma. You can learn to trade there, construction or youth media. In the youth media part of the trade, I learned a lot. You can gain, like, practice interviewing with some of the teachers. That really helps out throughout your skills. And you can get into apprenticeships if you work hard enough and prove that you're worth it.
Well, and, like, one of the days that I was there, because I was there for almost a week, and one of the days that I was there, you had gone off with somebody. What was going on with that, if you don't mind me asking? I mean, you were. My understanding is you were going out to a job site or something like that, and learning a little bit about how that type of relationship takes place. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. What do you mind talking about that at all?
Well, I start my apprenticeship on the 14th of this month, installing fire sprinklers. Since I'm in youth media, and I want to go into construction part of the trade in my future. Daniel, he's my career coach, and he just brought me through the field, took me to a construction site, and I liked it a lot, though. I saw how it was on the in the field, and I learned a lot.
What did you think about that when you came back? What did you learn?
I learned, though, it's not as easy as it looks, though.
Yeah.
You got to be more safe because there's a lot of machinery around. You can get hit in the head. If you're not safe, you can get seriously hurt.
I remember you said something when you came back about, you know, looking people in the eye and shaking them in the hand and shaking their hand, you know, when you know, being assertive that way, you know. I thought that was pretty cool. It seemed like one thing that I know about Portland Youth Builders is that they definitely have a really good group of folks that are, you know, staff members that are really doing some stuff there. So shouts out to all of them, Matt, Jessica, everyone at Portland Youth Builders does a wonderful job. So I'm always really excited to go. So So that was our segment. You know, that was a segment that we did. It was a lot of fun. And now what I'd like to do is kind of transition into something else that's going on with me. I've got two guests, Joel Brown and Brandon Speck. They're going to explain to us a little bit about what's going on this weekend at PSU. We've got an event that's going on there. Why don't you go ahead and just jump into it?
Yeah. All right. I'm Joel Brown. I'm a student coordinator for Students for Unity, and I'm also part of the Law and Disorder Collective Organizing Committee for this year's annual Law and Disorder Conference.
Yeah. My name is Brandon Speck, and I'm also involved in the Law and Disorder Collective as well as a, excuse me, as a member of Students for Unity as well.
And it might be actually a little bit beneficial to give a little bit of a background about what this conference is about. And it was started 4 years ago in the spring of 2009, I believe.
2010,
thank you. And it was a collaboration with Oregon Jericho, which is a political prisoner amnesty group here, and the Northwest Student Coalition, which Students for Unity was a part of. And that conference was about rallying support for political prisoners and prisoners of war held in the U.S., as well as looking for alternatives to incarceration and alternatives to police, because that was actually held in the aftermath of a number of police shootings in Portland, Aaron Campbell and Keaton Otis, as well as Oscar Grant in the Bay. And so that was kind of what provoked the first conference.
Yeah, and since then the conference has sort of shifted to just addressing political repression as like a large entity as well. Mm-hmm. Of course, including like police and prison abolition ideas, as well as just addressing political repression, especially this year with all the grand jury happenings.
Right. There's been a series of raids in the Northwest that took place this summer where actually a lot of folks were targeted for their political beliefs, and they were facing grand juries, which are agents of political repression, where people are persecuted specifically for their political beliefs, and it's a way of usurping political movements. And so luckily the folks that were detained for not cooperating with the grand juries are all out now, but it's important to keep that discussion going to prepare for the future.
Yeah. And I think it's also important to address that we, at the conference, there's a lot of different struggles. There's a lot of, we have a lot of folks involved in ecological struggles, as well as folks from involved in earlier struggles in the 60s and 70s during the radical periods in that time as well speak. So we try and bring a lot of voices, bring a lot of people doing a lot of different struggles to kind of come together, kind of share notes, so to speak.
Exactly. Because especially, I mean, with the grand jury raids, a lot of the tactics that we're seeing are reminiscent of the McCarthy era and of this late 60s with COINTELPRO. And so,
So folks, and there are still folks out there, believe it or not, that aren't familiar with COINTELPRO quite a bit. I mean, of course, we know that that's something that we don't learn about in public high school and what have you, and in college. It's something that you typically have to target as far as a historical, cultural type of curriculum. In order to learn. So let's talk a little bit about what that is, just so folks are aware. I mean, I think that's a really important thing that people should know about.
Yeah,
is
any, absolutely.
Either one of you guys want to take that on?
Yeah, sure. I mean, COINTELPRO is short for Counterintelligence Program. It was a program brought in forth by I don't know if it was strictly the FBI or the CIA, but it was essentially a government program.
It was a collaboration.
Yeah. It was a program specifically designed to undermine the growing popular support for the Black Panther Party and a lot of other radical movements happening in the 60s and 70s. Supposedly, on paper, it's been, you know, disbanded, but we can still tell that there's mass political repression happening in our country now, as evidenced by the grand juries. Certainly morphed and taken shape.
I've interviewed folks that have definitely been targets.
Yeah.
Back in the day and even, you know, up to today, so...
Right, and especially with the Green Scare, which is similar tactics used by the FBI and the CIA to usurp environmental activists and animal liberation activists. There's a group called SAC Political Support who are rallying support for Eric McDavid, who was a political prisoner, and the CIA actually began to kind of usurp a group of people and organize and orchestrate this supposed hypothetical, bombing or whatever, but it never actually happened, and so it was a conspiracy to put these people in prison, and so definitely those tactics are still being seen.
Yeah, and it's important because at the conference we like to, you know, take all these struggles happening, like ecological struggles, green struggles, and try to link them up with, you know, folks fighting for Black liberation and class struggles and stuff like that, and really kind of put the focus on that, like, whether you're, you know, focusing on environmentalism or black liberation or, you know, class equity or, you know, any sort of alternative to capitalism, you know, all these struggles are won. And, you know, the state, whether it be the state, you know, they want to, the police or the FBI, they want to bring the hammer down on it all. So it's important that we all sort of, you know, like I said, join up, you know, share notes and realize that while our struggles might look a little different, they're all sort of the same, and certainly are targets of the same entity as well.
Well, with the small amount of time that we have left, let's focus a little bit more in depth on kind of what's going to be happening at that event. Basically, what you guys are offering here are some different solutions on how to kind of deal with the repression, oppression, whatever word you want to use. I mean, and it depends on, you know, what kind of what shape or form it's coming to you at. But there are some solutions, and the one thing that really struck me is that there was a really wide variety of different approaches that people are taking out there, and this is just going to be a really interesting conference because of it's really kind of eclectic, even though all of these organizations have this fundamental idea that links them together. So why don't you go ahead and just kind of talk a little bit about some of the different things that we can expect at this conference.
Cool, yeah. Well, there's definitely a lot of workshops that I'm pretty excited about. There's a lot of different methods for resisting state repression. There's a workshop called Hip-Hop as a Tool for Liberation, which I'm really excited about.
That's Walida and Mauritius?
Yeah.
And folks from KBOO, or KBOO listeners, I think, probably our Prison Pipeline listeners, too, are familiar with her. Yeah, she does a lot of really good work in town.
Absolutely.
And there's another workshop looking at community accountability, so dealing with aggressive behavior within communities without looking to the state. And so I'm really excited. That's going to be delivered by Praxis, and they're a group that works with survivors of sexual assault and aggressors to come to some sort of mediation.
Yeah, and there's also going to be a panel primarily put on by a lot of excuse me, there's a sort of a panel of a lot of different groups sort of addressing the false dichotomy that's kind of been tossed around of this false dichotomy between like nonviolence and direct action, and sort of looking at the tactics that a lot of activists and a lot of groups engage in, and a lot of controversial issues around like whether to remain like strictly nonviolent or just this idea of direct action, and sort of confronting the idea that that's a false dichotomy, that you can engage in a lot of different struggles and have it be nonviolent as well as taking direct action. So sort of like you know, cutting through all the nonsense that I think that a lot of folks put on us, you know, saying like you have to be like strictly nonviolent, but just looking at what tactics are effective. There's going to be a big panel on that as well, put on by Blazing Arrows Housing Liberation Organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds really like a really good one too.
Yeah.
So, and why don't we just tell folks, you know, we know it's at PSU. What is it? Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And what time are you guys opening things up and closing it down, and where can people go to find out more about what that agenda looks like?
Cool. So it begins Friday night. We've just got a couple events to kick off the weekend, beginning at, I believe 4:30 to 6 p.m. If you've got a group and you wanna get your stuff out there and table, you can set up between 4:30 and 6 p.m. And it's going to be in Parkway North, which is on the first floor of the Smith Memorial Student Union. And we're going to be having a panel on grand jury resistance. And then Saturday morning, we get started real early, 9 a.m. We're going to have some refreshments. And if, once again, if you've got an organization and you want a table, we've got some space for you. So get in contact with us. We've got an email that I'll read to you later. But we start the workshops at 10:30 on Saturday morning and 11:30 on Sunday. And those go all day. We've got keynote events on Saturday beginning at 6 and keynote events on Sunday at 4:30.
Can anyone come to this event?
Absolutely. We do our best to make sure everything's free. We have free food, free refreshments. It's disability affirmative. So anyone's welcome to come, unless you're a cop.
Yeah, you mentioned free food. Yeah, exactly. Dinner is provided at 5 p.m. That's going to be catered by Anjoni Cafe. And so we're going to have some dinner provided. And so I do want to give you the email. It's lawandisorder@gmail.com.
Go ahead and repeat that one more time.
lawandisorder@gmail.com. That's right. There's only one D, so you got to combine the two.
Okay, and you can also find this information on Facebook and on WordPress, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah. And what do they want to look up in order to find that? Do you remember that off the top of your head?
You search Law and Disorder, yeah. WordPress, yeah. You'll find okay, it. It's the first one on Google.
Okay. So you can also find information on KBOO's website at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. I want to thank my guests today, both Joel and Brandon, and also my special guest host here, Ricky, today, tonight for joining me and opening up these really important discussions and dialogue on what's happening with folks in the community. And when I'm talking about the folks in the community, that also includes you who are incarcerated. So shouts out to all you out there as well. So that's going to wrap it up for us tonight. Thanks for listening. This has been KBOO. Community Radio, 90.7 FM, and this has been Prison Pipeline. I'm Carlos Chavez. Thank you.
At 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music. Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.
Particles on the Wall.
An exploration of the effects of nuclear technology on the Pacific Northwest and the world.
Particles on the Wall.
An exhibit of art, literary works, science, and historical memorabilia that describes the human and environmental impact of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation.
Particles on the Wall.
May 3rd through June 14th, second floor gallery in the EcoTrust building.
Particles on the Wall.
Co-sponsored by Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility and KBOO Community Radio.
Particles on the Wall.
Information can be found online at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
And it is about 7:03 p.m., Monday, May 6, 2013. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for an abridged edition of our daily broadcast of Hard Knock Radio, followed by a special presentation of the Michael Slate Show. Stick around.
What is it about soul food that you love? I mean, what's so appealing?
The spice, the seasoning.
Came for the fried chicken.
My relationship with soul food has to be one of those marriages that you just don't divorce from and that don't break up and don't get separated from.
Everybody loves soul food. Everybody loves soul food.
Soul food is a great part of our culture because it's a time of coming together. It's a time of cooking together, talking together, sitting down and consuming together.
That's why when we pray, good Lord, good meat, come on, let's eat. Hallelujah.
Soul food is a repository for our history and for our dreams, and it's this memory of comfort. And soul food represents Black.
Soul food! You ain't get your fingers greasy, man. You ain't eat no soul food, you know?
So not only was soul food, but soul food is the soul food conversation, the conversation of people who cook soul food, who didn't have a lot of money, so therefore they fried the chicken and made the grits and made the greens and made the string beans and mac and cheese.
Soul food for me is love, and it's the main ingredient.
At home, we didn't call it soul food, we just called it dinner.
I passed the exit.
My family is from a small southern town called Milledgeville, Georgia. Food is a huge part of the culture in Georgia, especially what is now affectionately called soul food.
Mom, what is that you're doing?
I'm putting the foil around the edges of the pie crust so that when I put it in the oven, the edges won't burn.
So I have all of these beautiful memories of my mother, sister, and me preparing and cooking soul food for our trips from New York to Georgia. We would wrap the food in foil and put it in brown paper bags. Looking back, those were some of the best times for us as a family. Soul food was a big part of our journey. We bonded as we drove south eating my mother's fried chicken. My parents told us stories about what it was like growing up in the Jim Crow South. As we crossed the Mason-Dixon line and made our way into the Deep South, my father would have my sister and me close our eyes and imagine what life was like during slavery.